You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Benjamin Stein's novel, The Canvas, concerns a writer and a doctor whose fates are bound up with a man who may or may not be a Holocaust survivor. The book, whose action takes place in the shadow of the Holocaust, examines memory and identity, materialism and mysticism, and madness and medicine. It's published by Open Letter. It was translated from the German by WNYC news anchor Brian Zumhagen, and I'm pleased that it brings both Mr. Stein and Mr. Zumhagen to our show today. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having us.
Benjamin, your two protagonists are linked by their relationship with Minsky, who claims to have been a Holocaust survivor. Isn't Minsky based on a real person?
Yes. In fact, the character Minsky is based on the Swiss writer Benjamin Wilkomirski, who in 1995 published a Holocaust memoir about his surviving the Shoah in Auschwitz and Majdanek, which turned out to be a fraud some years later.
It was so when it was exposed as a fraud, did it occur to you that it would make an interesting plot for a novel?
It was actually a little bit more intense because I met Wilkomirski in 1996 at the Leipzig Book Fair. My first novel appeared in the very same season. So the organizers at the Leipzig Book Fair found a good idea to bring us together for a double reading from our books. And I met him at the bar before the show and found him a very nice guy. He was very into building clarinets. So we spoke about music and instruments and not at all about our books. That's often the case between writers, by the way. And then the show started, and it was a very strange experience. He could not read from his book. He always had an actor with him, and he was playing the clarinet in between. It was a very weird experience. So after the show, I thought, okay, this is just not my style. But still, the guy is a nice boy. So I visited him in Switzerland to see his workshop with all the instruments. So when I read in the newspaper 3 years later that all this, you know, seemed to be a fraud, I didn't even care whether he was willfully lying or whether the journalist was right at all. It was not so clear at that moment. But I knew immediately this was it would destroy Wilkomirski as a person.
Well, people have written fraudulent memoirs in the past, or they have fudged details. But, yeah, something like this can ruin a career, and he must have been aware that it could really destroy him as a writer.
You have to consider that he may really have thought that it was true. He was not... I cannot decide whether he was, you know, a healthy man or in some, you know, mental disorder, and I don't want to decide.
Well, Brian, how much does a translator get involved in all of this? Do you think about these things, or do you just simply try to get the words right?
I didn't try to resolve that issue of the authenticity here because, of course, the whole book is really about the inability to trust your memories. And also the book, because of the structure of it, which we should talk about, the fact that you can flip it over and choose which narrator to begin with.
There are two narrators, and unlike other books where there are two narrators, you actually have to turn the book upside down to read the other narrator, and you can choose whichever one you want to start with.
Right, you have to choose. That's actually
idea. The point is that you're not suggesting start with this side and then flip it over to that side.
Right, it's up to chance or up to your decision where you start reading.
So did you write them with this in mind, or is this something
of
that
course.
Occurred to you along
a book
the
like
way?
This has to be constructed. It doesn't, you know, just come in by chance. No, the very idea was I knew I would have two narrators. One is basically the alter ego of a close friend of Wilko Mirsky. Let's talk about the character. This is more fair. He's a close friend of Minsky in the book. And the other one, Jan Wexler, he is the journalist who discovered the fraud, which he cannot remember or doesn't want to remember anymore, as it turns out in the book. So two people who were, you know, very much connected to the case.
Do we have to read both sides to really get a sense of what happened?
Yeah.
One of them is a psychoanalyst who is helping Minsky recover his memories. And as you said, the other one, Jan Wexler, is a writer who finds
this is an interesting thing, what you say, because, in fact, he is not helping him to discover the memories. This is what the press wrote and what finally, you know, destroyed his career while he was, you know, just a friend of Minsky. So, and Zichroni is basically blaming Wexler that he has, you know, destroyed his career and his entire life as a collateral damage
to the case. Well, we've seen in the past, we saw with a lot of recovered memory, we saw people remembering false memories, mm-hmm. encouraged by hypnotists and psychoanalysts. So you're drawing upon a lot of things that were happening at that time in the 80s.
Right. Yeah.
In the case of Wexler, you have another issue here, which is that he has a doppelganger. There are two Jan Wexlers.
That's what he thinks.
Well, one of them is a secular Jew. The other one's a religious Jew.
No, that's actually the way he wants to see it. In the very beginning of his narration, a suitcase is delivered to his doorstep, and he absolutely denies that this suitcase belongs to him. But when he opens the suitcase, he finds, you know, some belongings that more or less obviously are his or related to his life. So, and he discovers, you know, step by step that this other Jan Wexler is in fact, you know, not a doppelganger, but this is the Jan Wexler he tries to forget, that he, in fact, you know, was this person.
Well, the suitcase includes a copy of the picture of Dorian Gray, which is about a man who never changes, but his picture ages.
Right. What the very connection between the picture of Dorian Gray and the canvas is, and Zichroni cites, you know, this at a particular point in the book, that, you know, by stabbing the picture, Dorian Gray is finally killed. So, and Zichroni says, when you take the identity away from a person, you're basically killing the person.
Now, Brian, there's a doppelganger aspect to this whole story, just in your involvement. I've known you as the weekend host of Morning Edition here on WNYC.
Right.
How did you get involved in this project?
It's a really a funny story, actually. I was on a fellowship to look into sustainable architecture and incentives for green building in Germany. I was with a group of environmental reporters, of which I'm really not one, but I was looking for some reporting to do in Germany. And ironically, this group of environmental journalists ended up being affected by an environmental event
because the
volcanic ash cloud grounded flights in Germany for longer than anywhere else in Europe, I think. We were stuck in Berlin for an entire week. And when I had gotten to Germany at the beginning of the trip, I read a profile in the Newsweekly Die Zeit about Benjamin Stein and about this book, and it sounded very interesting to me, but I kind of filed it away. Then when I got stuck for a week, I said, I'm going to go read that book. So I sat in a cafe and I read it, and for some reason, even though this is my first literary translation, the whole time I was reading it, I kept thinking about how I would deal with some of the linguistic challenges and some of the specialized vocabulary that this book has a lot of. But I found it very gripping. In short, when I got home, I became a fan of his on Facebook. And shortly thereafter, he posted this thing that this publisher in Rochester, Open Letter, put up saying, "This is the next German book we want to see translated." And I thought, I have to be one of the only Anglophones who's read this book. So I contacted them and sent them some samples. And it all happened very quickly through a series of very lucky accidents for me.
So you had to be fluent enough in Germany to even understand the subtleties of this, and then also teach yourself a little bit of Yiddish?
Well, I have studied Yiddish in the past. I was sort of part
of
this.
You're Irish, aren't
you? I am indeed.
Although the name is Zumhagen.
Yeah, I have this very German name, totally, but I'm mostly Irish in my
Not
family
O-Zumhagen.
Background. I think some people in Massachusetts wanted to call us O'Hagan for a while there. But anyway, I did in the 90s, I did study some Yiddish, and it sort of gave me some of the cultural context through the study of Yiddish literature that I was able to bring to this project. Although I also had the good fortune to be able to work very closely with Benjamin on sections where I might have been a bit out of my depth on some of the subject matter, and he was able to guide me to sources I could read to understand things a little bit better.
Well, it's always helpful when you're translating a book by somebody who speaks your language as well.
Yes.
You probably could have translated it into English.
Oh, for sure not. For sure not. I mean, writing is really you have to get your tools together to know a language so good that you can write in it. That takes a little bit more than.
Well, complicating this whole thing, didn't you change your identity and take the name Benjamin Stein when you were a teenager?
I wouldn't say that changed my identity. Unfortunately, I was published at a very early age. My first poems were published in Germany when I was 12 years old.
In East Germany.
In East Germany. So when I was 16, there were actually, you know, some publications out there I was ashamed of. So, and I was longing, you know, for a fresh start. And it all came together with my discovery, you know, of a religious feeling, because I come from a non-religious family. So I guess those two things blended together so that I chose a pseudonym, right?
Well, you have another name. Do members of your family call you by the other name, which you have refused to reveal?
Yeah, I mean, after so many years, yeah.
But most people just say Benjamin, and you were walking down the street and I yelled out Benjamin.
All of them. The other name is forgotten. I even forgot it.
You grew up in East Berlin, like one of the characters, Wechsler. I'm assuming to some degree he is based on you.
Could be.
Well, have you thought much about all the mysteries of and complications of this book?
Absolutely. Just to bring up a question that you started to ask earlier, the point for me as a translator wasn't so much to sort out the truth or to privilege a narrator. Because the book is constructed in the way that it is, that the reader has to make a decision, my biggest job was to make the tone and the sound of the narrators to maintain the distinction that it's very much in the original.
Because they have different voices.
Because they really sound different. One's coming from a Haredi environment, the other, and he's also telling a series of events that have completed, whereas Wechsler's world is kind of coming apart in real time, and he's responding to things. And so he's also a wilder, sort of more conversational voice. And Zichroni is very sort of top-down, very analytical, very sort of frosty almost in a way. And his language was harder to prune in order to make it sort of flow.
I thank you both so much for being on our show. Benjamin Stein, author of The Canvas, now translated into English by Brian Zumhagen. It is published by Open Letter, and you can read it either way. Turn it upside down, you get, well, in the end, you wind up getting the same story. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.